This week marks 50 years since Robert F. Kennedy was assassinated. It was just after midnight on June 5, 1968. Kennedy, a U.S. senator from New York, had just won California's Democratic presidential primary. In his victory speech, he talked about trying to heal a divided country.
The divisions, whether it's between blacks and whites, between the poor and the more affluent, or between age groups, or on the war in Vietnam, that we can start to work together. We are a great country and a selfish country and a compassionate country. And I intend to make that my basis for running and over the period of the next year.
Minutes after wrapping up that speech, he was shot. He died the next day. Sirhan Sirhan was later convicted of the murder. He's serving life in prison. Joining us now is Julian Zelizer, professor of history and public affairs at Princeton University. Julian, welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
And let's go back to where this presidential run started 50 years ago. Kennedy had wrestled with the decision about whether to enter the presidential race. Why did he finally decide to do it?
That's right. He had been thinking about doing this for a while. He had been talking with friends and colleagues, but he was very hesitant to do it. Some things happen in early 1968 that increases motivation to run. The Tet Offensive in Vietnam, like many Americans, he is shattered by the news this war would be ongoing. The Kerner Commission report leads him to be triply concerned about the state of race relations in the United States. But then what happens is in March, during the New Hampshire primary, the other candidate who is competing against Lyndon Johnson, Eugene McCarthy, does pretty well, unexpectedly well in the primary. And this motivates RFK to believe that he can really compete against an incumbent president. So there's many parts of the mix that are at work.
And the incumbent president was Lyndon Johnson, who knew that he was in trouble when McCarthy did well in the New Hampshire primary. But when he said this on national TV on March 31st, 1968, people were shocked.
I shall not seek, and I will not accept, the nomination of my party for another term as your president.
That announcement was a surprise, Julian.
Oh, yeah, that was a jaw-dropping moment where the president goes on television. Nobody knows he's going to do this other than a small group of people who work with him. And he announces he's not going to run for re-election. And most people assume that he would. Most people still thought that even with the problems in 1968, he could be a pretty tough candidate. But he drops out and he says he's going to focus on ending the war. He's going to focus on making sure the Great Society is financed. But one thing he won't do is run. And all of a sudden, the field is wide open for people like Robert Kennedy, McCarthy, and others to actually compete.
But Johnson's vice president was Hubert Humphrey, right? Why wasn't he in the list that you just mentioned there?
Well, he becomes the establishment candidate, and the party is backing Humphrey, and the expectation is that he will do well. But no one's really excited about Hubert Humphrey, even though there had been a moment in his career he was the icon of liberalism. By 1968, he is being dragged down by the weight of Vietnam. And so Humphrey is the person who takes over the role Lyndon Johnson had. But there's a lot more excitement about Robert Kennedy, even about Eugene McCarthy, because they are standing firmly by that moment against the war in Vietnam. And Humphrey is not breaking with the administration on this war.
If Kennedy had not been killed, do you think he would have been the nominee of the Democratic Party?
It's hard to tell. This is one of the great what-ifs in political history, and many people think that he would have, especially after he wins in the California primary. But we do have to remember the party was going to back Hubert Humphrey, and I'm not convinced that it was automatic that Robert Kennedy would have a path to the nomination. Humphrey is a stalwart. He's been not only vice president, he's been a key senator. And a lot of the party still didn't want to break either with the Johnson administration's position on the Vietnam War. So I don't think it's clear what would have happened. And that's why it's one of these amazing what ifs to think about.
Well, we know what did happen. And he was killed, as we said, by Sirhan Sirhan. The Democratic Convention was held later that year in Chicago. It's clear at that point that Humphrey would be the nominee. But what people see on TV is the riots, police and protesters clashing in the streets. chanting, "The whole world is watching." And in his acceptance speech, Humphrey said it was a moment of personal pride, but he also said this.
Yet one cannot help but reflect the deep sadness that we feel over the troubles and the violence which have erupted regrettably and tragically in the streets of this great city.
Humphrey later called the convention a catastrophe. Why?
Well, for many people who were watching it, it looked like the Democratic Party was out of control. They had been watching the fights within the party for a long time now with all the anti-war protests and the tensions between Democrats. But here it played out right on television. And you had the police in a city that was run by one of the most prominent Democrats, Mayor Daley. Mm-hmm. The Democrats are inside trying to create order. And outside on the streets, there are police clashing with protesters. And the protesters are angry, not with the Republicans, but with the Democrats for not going strong against the Vietnam War. So this was the worst image for Humphrey to showcase at the convention. This looked like a party that was literally falling apart at the end of this turbulent decade.
And at that time of the convention, Richard Nixon had already secured the Republican nomination. Here he is in his acceptance speech in Miami.
And tonight it's time for some honest talk about the problem of order of the United States. Let us always respect, as I do, our courts and those who serve on them. But let us also recognize that some of our courts, in their decisions, have gone too far in weakening the peace forces as against the criminal forces in this country.
You hear him talking about the criminal forces. Richard Nixon basically ran a law and order campaign and won the presidency.
That's exactly right. He does promise that he's going to bring an end to Vietnam in a very vague fashion. But the theme he really hones in on is law and order. And the law and order plays well to what people had seen in the Chicago convention, meaning it seemed like a lot of disorder. It seemed like a lot of lawlessness. And he appeals to what will be called the silent majority, saying he will move the country in a different direction. And he will focus less on what the Supreme Court had been focused on, which is talking about rights of people who are arrested, rights of criminals. And instead, he will turn attention to cracking down on everything that people were watching. And it's a very effective campaign and in many ways defines some of the themes of conservatism for the next few decades.
Julian, I was not alive in 1968, but I've certainly learned a lot in my life about that year, about Robert F. Kennedy, about Martin Luther King, and all the other things that were going on at that time. I wonder, though, given what's happening right now politically, whether you think that what happened in 1968 feels as momentous as it used to.
I think it does. And looking back at that year is actually a reminder of some of the more chaotic and unstable moments we've gone through politically. And for different reasons, today many people focus on the president himself and the kind of presidency he's conducting. Whereas back in 68, it's even broader than that. With all the social conflict that's unfolding, and some of the instability with our institutions, and of course this war, which is massive and it's a total disaster in the minds of many people. So for me, I look back and it doesn't diminish how bad things got, but it's a reminder that we go through moments like these, and they're very difficult. The good news is we can move forward, and our institutions are able to recover from this. It's not guaranteed, but it should offer a little insight into how that happens.
That's Julian Zelizer, a professor of history and public affairs at Princeton University, also author of The Fierce Urgency of Now, Lyndon Johnson, Congress, and the Battle for the Great Society. Julian, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.